Just the distinguished Rabbonim, who are dear friends and colleagues. Thank you, Rabbi Axelrod, for, as always, your overly gracious comments and introduction. Just Rabbi Dr. Glad, Rabbi Wolf, Rabbi Shai Schechter, who I'm so grateful who arranged this opportunity for me this evening. And before I really begin, and I know I'm against a hard stop, speaking at the end of a fast, there's no flexibility or wiggle room. The worst that happens is I won't be invited back again, but still, not looking to test it. But I do want to take one moment to express Hakaras HaTov, to express the gratitude, not only of our Boca Raton and South Florida community, but Jewish community across the United States, to Rabbi Dr. Glatt, who throughout this past year and a half and longer I know with a lot of Mesiras Nefesh, it's not easy to take positions. Some are popular, some unpopular among some, and yet you did it with such confidence, obviously competence, and for me personally, always responded every question and the guidance that we needed. And I can't imagine among the gifts and the brachas that Hashem bestowed upon us as compasses to guide us and navigate through what was an impossible time, we couldn't have imagined getting through it without you. For that, we thank you. It seems yet again, as we prepare and we begin, as we've launched the 3 weeks, yet again, we don't need to get into the mood for the 3 weeks. Just this morning, I received an email with shilas from somebody who is related to a person who has family members who are in the condo in Surfside, whose fate yet remains unknown. They emailed me a series of shilas, impossible shilas, certainly beyond me, which should be beyond anybody's reality to have to answer. Questions including if only parts of a person are found, will DNA be enough to confirm their death? Will it allow Avelis to begin? Dental records in Halacha, will that be enough to identify? Will that be enough to free a woman so she's not considered an Aguna? When will, if the Yurtzeit be observed, will it be the day that the building came down, or the day that hope was lost, or the day that something was discovered? And the questions went on, impossible, impossible questions. And even as we gather this evening, we can't yet process, there is no closure. Everyone is overwhelmed with grief, whether you're from Surfside, South Florida, or you're a decent person anywhere in the world, by the prospect of how many people have loved ones that they don't want to give up hope, and yet, with each passing moment and each passing hour, the situation seems increasingly hopeless. The day the tower fell, the day that the building collapsed, I got a text from someone who recently endured the unimaginable loss of a child through a horrific catastrophe. He wrote, quote, "I don't even know who to call in Miami, but if you think I can be of help to the families, please let me know. I'll be on the next flight down. I really don't have anything good to say. It's just that I can relate." We have not been short tragedies in this past year. Since we got up off the ground last Tisha B'Av, we hoped for a brighter day. We longed for salvation, redemption. We davened from the depths of our hearts not to be here yet again. Another Bein HaMitzarim without music, without shaving, without simchas. Another countdown to Churban, to sitting on the floor. And yet, think about this past year, how many we tragically lost. And how many were not casualties in the ultimate sense, but this pandemic, the rift, the division, the anxiety, the mental illness and struggles, the long-term health challenges and implications, the trauma that we have yet to fully even really appreciate. The 45 neshamas who were lost in Meron, Carlin Stone, the collapse of the bleachers, and now this tragedy that is still unfolding in Surfside. This is not an Avelis Yesham. This is not an ancient or an old Avelis. We don't have to get ourselves in the mood. We don't have to produce or generate tears for something from so long ago. All we have to do is look at the news, the Jewish news, the greater news. And one can't help but cry, to feel Churban all around us, to sense as if Hashem is so distant. He's so far away. He seems so inaccessible. Where is he? Where is his love? Where is his light? Where is His presence? Where is His protection? Where is the Ribono Shel Olam? How do we answer impossible questions? I was already in New York with my family last week, and I heard the news last Motzei Shabbos, a 48-year-old young man, a father of three in Boca Raton, who on Shabbos was playing games with his family, stood up from the couch and said, "I don't feel well, excuse me for a moment," collapsed at that moment, and his Levaya was on Sunday. He had illness, but he wasn't yet at that point. And just a few weeks earlier, he had told me that his son approached him and said, "We know how this ends. Why? Why, Abba? Why would Hashem do this?" And he asked me for words, for advice, what to answer, guidance, when there is none. In these moments when Hashem can feel so far away. In his new kuntras, Bayam Derechecha on Bein HaMetzarim, Rav Itzhak Meir Morgenstern points out that for these 3 weeks, in contrast to the rest of the year, Hashem doesn't change. Hashem is the same. He's the same infinite, the same omnipotent, the same all-perfect, the same all-knowing. The ones who change is us. Hashem only has love for us. He only has protection. His presence is everywhere. But how it manifests itself, how it expresses itself, how we perceive His presence, He doesn't change. But we do. It's entirely up to us. You know, parents love children. Healthy, good parents have an unconditional, an overwhelming, a love they can't even articulate. There are no words to capture the way one loves a child. And when children behave, when they give us nachas and pride, we express affection. We give gifts, we give presents, positive feedback, special treats. We want to bestow that love with joy and positivity and the best of everything. But there are times that children, when we were children, our own children, those who long for children should be blessed to have healthy, wonderful children. But there are times that children don't give their parents nachas. They don't behave, make mistakes, they do things wrong, they have poor judgment. And in those moments, a good parent, as painful as it is, does not just bestow positivity and affection and gifts and presents, but a good parent teaches consequences and accountability, perhaps even has to mete out a punishment, take away some technology, put in time out, depending on the age or the indiscretion of the child. Says Rav Itzhak Meir, he just said a moment ago in our davening, Avinu Malkeinu, the Ribono Shel Olam, even before He's Malkeinu, even before He's our King, even before we recognize His dominion, we recognize Avinu. He is our parent, He's our loving Father. And as a loving Father, when we behave, when we give Nachas Ruach to the Ribono Shel Olam, when we make Him proud, when we make good choices, when we live according to His vision and His values, positivity, love, accessibility, we feel His presence. But when we misbehave, when we do things wrong, when we have poor judgment, when we come up short, like a loving, good Father, He holds us accountable. And the negativity that we feel, the lack of affection or the inaccessibility that we perceive is not because He's changed. Both the good and the bad, the reward and the punishment, it all comes from the same love. He, our Father, the source, is only love. The question is us. Are we deserving? That's why the Navi calls Tisha B'Av a Moed. It's a designated appointed time. It's a day that will be transformed into a Yontif. It's a day we can perceive and feel His love, not in the way, not manifest in the channel that we want. We want reward and gifts and pride. We want presence and protection. But one also feels the connection with a parent, even in a moment of punishment. Kotzker Rebbe says it's called Menachem Av. It's called the month Menachem Av. Not because the Nechama comes after Tisha B'Av, but even the 9 days, and even Tisha B'Av itself. When a parent loves a child enough to discipline them, that's comfort. That's consolation. The parent who doesn't truly love the child, the parent who's too tired, too weak, the parent who doesn't care enough, doesn't discipline the child. Even that discipline we receive comes from that place of love, and so we refer to the month as Menachem Av. So what did we do wrong? Why are we here? Why yet again, another 3 weeks, another 9 days, another Tisha B'Av? Why? Why do we have to feel we're struggling for His presence and protection? Why is his love coming through as negativity, not positivity, as punishment, not reward? And the answer is nothing new and nothing you haven't heard and nothing that we don't return to each and every year to the point that it sounds cliche, and yet here again we are needing to hear it, needing to revisit it, and maybe now more than ever. Gemara Yuma Daf Tes tells us the Bais Hashem, the second Beis Hamikdash, was destroyed because of sinas chinam. And if the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of a violation of the three cardinal sins, it tells us that sinas chinam, the baseless hatred, the tension, conflict, animosity, sitting in judgment of others, being overly critical of others, that is as bad as the three cardinal sins. The people at the time of Bais Hashem, they were observing Torah, scrupulous and vigilant in Hilchos Shabbos, careful when it came to kashrus. They were subscribing to every WhatsApp group and every newsletter and every email. They were listening to every drasha. They were being careful with every aspect of halacha, except when it came to how they treated one another. They were using the Torah to divide, not to connect, to push apart, not to bring together. Sinas chinam. That word hatred, you'd say, hatred, hate's a very, very strong word. So I recently ran into a woman. And she said to me, "Rabbi, when you get back to Boca, I need to meet with you." I said, "What's it about?" "Sure, I'd be happy to meet with you." And she said, "Honestly, I have so much hatred in my heart, and I don't know what to do with it." It's a lot of hatred. Wow. Where's this hatred from? She said, "The people who reacted to Corona and observed policies in their life different than what I think, who have a different approach, it's at the point of hatred. The people who voted in the last election differently than I did, and the consequence of it, I feel a hatred. It's not just I disagree, it's not even just I don't like. My heart is filled with an intolerance, with a hatred. Anyone who's different than I, anyone who interprets current events, politics, policies, anyone who interprets a pandemic and reacted to it differently than I, hatred. Hate was her word, not mine. I'm not looking forward to that meeting. But what is baseless hatred? Sinas chinam. Is hatred really ever baseless? Maybe it's warranted. Maybe it's justified. Maybe it has a basis. After all, the person Taka voted differently. And look at the consequence. And I'm trying not to hint in any direction right now, so don't bother trying to read into it. But Taka, the person voted differently or reacted differently or davened in a different place or a different way or had a different approach or attitude towards masks or distancing or the way they made their simcha or the way they attended or didn't attend mine. Isn't that a basis? Isn't that a reason? Isn't that a difference? Doesn't that justify the feeling of animosity, the hatred? So why is it called chinam? Why is it called baseless? There's always a basis for the hatred. Some people don't even like the other person's hairdo, their sense of style, the music they listen to. There's still a basis. There's a reason. People don't meet someone, know nothing about them, and choose to hate them. It's not chinam. It's not for no reason. There's always a cause, something generated. There's always a justification. Unless you understand that the word chinam implies so complained about the man, when they complained about the misery of the man, I was learning the daf, the last couple of blot, there's nothing to complain about. The gift, the bracha, the miracle of the mom, but they complained. And they say, "You remember? Remember the cucumbers? You remember the Israeli salad we had in Egypt? And it came chinam." And Chazal reinterpret chinam doesn't mean it was free, because that would be the most bizarre reaction of the Jewish people. It was free. 210 years, you broke your back. Genocide against our people. You were enslaved, subjugated, servitude, you weren't compensated one penny, and they gave you cucumbers, and you're talking about, wasn't it unbelievable, the cucumbers, when we were in slavery? Obviously, chinam doesn't mean free, so Chazal reinterpret chinam min ha-mitzvahs. The people remember chinam min ha-mitzvahs, when we were unburdened by the presence of the Ribbono Shel'olam, when we didn't feel bound by responsibility, accountability. You remember the life before Hashem imposed himself into it and onto it. Chinam. Perhaps sinas chinam. Chinam means when a person hates someone else because mitzvahs are not guiding their life. Because a sense of an awareness, an acute acknowledgement of the Ribbono Shel'olam's presence, that the Almighty not only exists, but that He exists in each and every one of us. that every human being we encounter is a chilek eloka mimal mamish. There is a godliness. There is a holy spark. There is something special. There is a unique expression of Hashem in every human being. And when I deny that person not only the humanity and the dignity of their difference, when I deny the person the godliness of their difference, that they're entitled to see things differently than I do, to come to different conclusions, to behave and to live differently, then I am denying the godliness in them. It's chinam. We can disagree. And I'm sure in this room and beyond these walls, we have many things we can disagree about passionately, enthusiastically, but respectfully, while acknowledging that someone's entitled to a different opinion, a different approach, a different conclusion, a different attitude. We're each created differently. We're each unique expressions of the Ribono Shel Olam. And as such, our personalities are each unique. They're distinct and they're different. The Gemara says, it's a bracha. When you see a myriad of people, you recite and you acknowledge Kishem She'ein Partzufeim Dom Mizel Azeh. Just like no two people's appearances are identical, so too their personalities are different. Well, what do you mean, no two? What's the connection, the Kishem? So I once heard a magnificent interpretation. The Kishem means, just like when I see someone who looks differently, their appearance is different than mine. They have a different hair color, or they have hair, or they have a different skin tone, or they have a different facial features, or they have a different... When I see someone who looks differently, they're born differently, it's a product and a function of their DNA, their genetics, their biology. I don't hold a grudge against them. It's not their fault. I'm not angry at them because they look different. So kishem, just like the appearance is not the choice of the individual, but they were designed that way, so too our attitudes, our personalities, our approaches to life. We are each a reflection of Hashem. We are each a unique expression of Hashem. And when someone hates someone else, when someone chooses to reject, to call a name, to marginalize, when someone hates a fellow Jew because they're different, they're denying the godliness in that fellow Jew. It's chinam. It's absent the Ribono Shel Olam. It's absent Hashem. It's not a violation bein adam l'chaveiro. Sinas chinam is a violation bein adam l'makom. To deny the godliness in the other, to deny the right and the entitlement of the other person to have a different opinion, is to deny their godliness. It's to deny the Ribono Shel Olam in them. Torah on the one hand commands us, it endorses loving all people, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. On the other hand, it condones that we have to hate evil. Ohavei Hashem sinu ra. So which is it? Do I have to love my fellow Jew or am I entitled to hate them? Ohavei Hashem sinu ra. So maybe the person who voted that way, that's ra. And if I really love Hashem, I have to hate them. Maybe the person who behaved that way during a pandemic, it was ra, it was evil, it was wicked, it was dangerous, it was reckless. And maybe therefore, ohavei Hashem, if I love God, I have to hate them. So the Baal Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, in Tanya Perek Lamed Beis, always remember that Leiv, he writes the following, quote, he says, it's a mitzvah to hate them, and it's also a mitzvah to love them. Both are true. You hate the Yetzirah, the evil inclination in them, and you love the goodness that is concealed in them, which is the spark of godliness. You can hate a person's actions if you think that they're reckless and ruthless, but you still have to love the person because there's a chelek eloka mima'al mamash. There's a godliness. There's a unique expression of Hashem in every person. We don't have to like everybody, but we have to love every fellow Jew. There are people we don't like. Personalities don't match. It's not a shidduch. You don't have to like. There are people whose lifestyle may offend us, or political orientation, or their sense of style, or the decisions disappoint us. There are people we can't relate to. And that's okay. You don't have to like everybody. Nowhere in the Torah is there a mitzvah to like a fellow Jew. Nowhere does it say you have to like a fellow Jew, but it does say you have to love your fellow Jew. Love is a verb. Love is a choice of how we act and how we behave. Love is not an emotion. Love is an action. It's the loyalty that we show. It's not how we feel about the other. It's how we treat the other person. And that's the antidote to this time. That's how we get up off the floor. That's how we finally stop doing this. That's how we turn around our Father from feeling He has to punish us to letting Him bestow love and reward for us. We don't have to like everyone, but we have to love them. I ask you, when we heard what happened in Meron, And you saw the pictures coming out as the casualty number grew. Did anyone look and say, well, that guy, he wears a hat that's different than mine. This one has long payas, payas behind his ear, no payas. I'll only grieve or mourn. I only shed a tear for the picture. Oh, that kid went to Shalvim. He grew up in Tinek. Now I can relate to this tragedy. Before anybody heard of Dani Morris Olav HaShalom, the extraordinary young man, it was a Klal Yisrael tragedy. It was an Avas Yisrael. It's part of a family. Members of our family died in a catastrophe. And when we'll learn coming out of Surfside, as we still daven and pray for miracles, will we only care or cry for those who wore the same type of yarmulke? Are we going to get their voting record to determine whether we should grieve or mourn? Are we going to only find out did they wear the mask under the nose, over the nose, N95, regular mask, before we decide if they're worth mourning over? We can disagree, and we don't have to like everyone, but we have to love them, because we're in one family. It's enough tolerating a fellow Jew. Sri Deish has a beautiful essay, and he writes there, it's a terrible word to use to tolerate a fellow Jew. He doesn't use this, but I say, you tolerate a bad rash, and you tolerate slow Wi-Fi. You don't tolerate a fellow Jew, you love them. You don't have to like them, but you have to love them. And you have to love them with everything that we have. Now, this inability to recognize the Tzelem Elokim in others, it's not a new problem. The challenges of conflict and strife, these are not new problems. They trace themselves back at least to Korach, and certainly earlier. But that problem continues in our time, and it continued even after the miracle of the ground opening up and swallowing up Korach. In our parasha, in Pinchas, this week's parasha, the Torah somewhat cryptically comments, "Uvnei Korach lo mesu." Korach's children didn't die. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I don't know how this happened. I'm already almost out of time. So I won't tell you the Gemara, but that Korach's children did shuv in the last minute, and therefore they didn't fall all the way into the abyss. A ledge protruded out and caught them. And they were able to climb out. And therefore we have Lamatzech and Korach Mizmor. We have Tehillim authored by the children of Korach. This wicked person who goes down as a villain, his own children did tshuva, his three sons came back. That's the simple understanding, the simple interpretation. But Rav Yisrael Meir Druck in his Eish Tamid, great Rosh Hashiva in Yerushalayim today, suggests near Lefarish Or B'Derach Drush. He acknowledges this Derach Drush. Korach hay harishon sheichnis ba'am Yisrael's inin machlokas. Korach introduced to Klal Yisrael the notion of a power struggle, of a breakaway community, of a challenge to authority and leadership. Korach introduced machlokas, strife and conflict and tension and division. And perhaps, says Rav Druk, uvnei Korach lo mesu, it means, bnei Korach, the toldos of a person is their legacy. Bnei Korach lo mesu, what he gave birth to, what he introduced, the seeds of machlokas lo mesu, it hasn't died down. It's still here, it's still strong, it is still around, it is still pernicious, and it is still trying to compromise and corrupt our very people. You know, everyone's always looking for the next skula, for parnasa. Who doesn't want to make more money, a greater income? So everyone's always looking for the next skula. Some say pitta maktoras from a klaf, some bake the shlissel challah right after Pesach. But the chidor of Chaim Yosef David Azulai, in his Sefer Yosef Tehilos, he writes an unbelievable skula. Listen carefully. This one, unfortunately, is not popular, but tonight, my friends, we can make it popular. He writes, Hashem is so amazing. Hashem is so great that even after a person makes a mistake, we come up short. Even after we fail him, nevertheless, his generosity knows no bounds. He continues to provide and to nourish us. That's the pasuk. Nosein lechem l'chol basar. Kodesh Baruch Hu gives lechem l'chol basar. Afil l'chotim. He gives income, parnasa. He sustains everyone, even the chotim, even those who fail him. Why? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam's kindness, it endures forever. And indeed, says the Chidah, on the very day that the Jewish people were unfaithful to Hashem, the day we practiced infidelity, the day we cheated on God and we worshipped the Egel, the man fell that day. The Ribbono Shel Olam stroked a check to Klal Yisrael on the day we cheated on him. That's the pasuk Lecha Hashem Atzdaka B'man. V'lanu boshes aponim be'egel. Despite the infidelity, despite the violation of trust, Kodesh Baruch Hu was so magnanimous, so generous, so great, he provided for us nonetheless. Ki li olam chasto. But says the Chidor Chaim Yosef David Azulai, listen carefully. On the day that Korach began the rebellion, on the day that Korach called another Jew a name, said, I won't daven with that minion, I want to be in charge, I want to be in control, this is how it should go. On the day that Korach introduced Machlokes, 2 to 3 million people went hungry. When the man didn't fall, there was no Costco pantry to go to. There was nothing in the freezer from leftovers from a previous Shabbos or Yontif. There was no backup. The day the man didn't fall was a day like us today that everyone went hungry. Shlach Kodesh and Yuma writes, Machlokes achas docha mea parnassos, that one machlokes can destroy 100 parnassos. So says the Chida, you want a school for parnassa? The man fell the day of the Egel, but the day of Korach machlokes, the man didn't fall. You want parnassa? Never, ever be connected to machlokes. There's a WhatsApp group that started just to keep track, just to keep you posted and updated on the latest machlokes. Leave the WhatsApp group. It's a conversation around the Shabbos table, who's not talking to who and what happened with who and who didn't come back at the shul and who. Quiet it down. Shut down the conversation around the Shabbos table. Stay away from machlokes, is the greatest school there is for parnasa. Pasha says in Korach v'lo yek Korach v'chad aso. And the Rambam doesn't, but the Smag and the Yireim, the Bahag and others count it as a mitzvah not to be like Korach, to be engaged in machlokes, to be engaged in politics, in the community, in shul, in school life, in sports, in everyday life. In Florida, we'd say in HOA. You have the bracha, you don't have to deal with HOAs. Homeowners association life. But to be involved in machlokas, you'll follow Korach right deep into the abyss. You'll disappear deep into the ground with no parnasa. Not only should we not get drawn into machlokas, we have to be the ones to stop machlokas. The Bali Musa, right? The quintessential bracha, we even said it now in Mincha Natinus. V'yaseim l'cha shalom, you want shalom, the greatest bracha, enkli machzik bracha like shalom. The greatest bracha we can have is peace and serenity. L'cha, v'yaseim l'cha, l'cha, it's on you. You have to be the first. Don't wait, don't stand on ceremony. I'm older, I'm the father or grandfather, I'm the mother or the grandmother, I'm the older sibling, I'm the friend, they wronged me, let them come to me, let them initiate, let them reach out. L'cha, you want shalom, it's on you. Moshe wasn't too arrogant. Moshe didn't stand on ceremony. Moshe didn't pursue honors. He went to Dasan Vaviram and did everything he could in order to end it. And the same is true with us. We want to get up off the ground. If we want to end the morning this year, it's no machlokas. It's no machlokas. You know, this corona, this pandemic has gifted us a lot of things. Most of which we didn't want. Some of them we do. We learned things about ourselves. We learned things about our family. We learned about our community. But we also learned that the ground shifted under our nose during corona. Minyanim popped up, communities and sub-communities popped up, new efforts and endeavors and initiatives and mostos popped up. And many of them are great brachas and they're wonderful. But what will their legacy be and what will we be left with? Will there be machlokas as a result of even those who, thank God, are healthy and well? Will we carry machlokas with us? I have 2 minutes left and I want to tell you the story, which may take a minute more than 2 minutes. When is the fast over? All right. I don't feel that guilty yet. The Baba of a Rebbe, Shlomo Halberstam, was known as a tremendous Ish Shalom. He was a man who pursued peace. He had an intolerance for strife, for tension, for machlokas. There are countless stories about him. Once Pashkevilim were hung about him, posters were hung attacking him, and he announced at the next Tish to his Hasidim. He said, whoever hung those posters about me, today you'd say whoever posted on social media or WhatsApp or made a YouTube video about me, whoever did that about me, said the Baba Vareba, I'm mochel, I can forgive them. But whoever tears them down and starts a machlokas, I refuse to forgive them. His Hasidim understood, they let it go, and therefore nothing escalated, nothing ever came of it. There's countless stories of him. But I want to close and share this one with you. There was an old machlokas in Hasidus, perhaps the most vicious machlokas in all of Hasidus, maybe the one that lasted even the longest, the worst in the history of Hasidus, the Baba Vera's great-great-grandfather, the Divrei Chaim of Sanz. He battled against the Sadigur Hasidim. He was a son of the Rishnitzer who was problematic. It was a question. He joined the Maskilim and it introduced the machlokas that lasted in Galicia for generations. It lasted for years and it followed into America. The Divrei Chaim rejected all of Sadigur, all of the different branches. They went to war and they battled a bitter, bitter, bitter machlokas between Sanz and Sadigur. One evening in Borough Park, The Baba Rebbe, Reb Shlomo, was walking home from his Beis Medrash. And he passed the shtibel of a branch of Sadigur Hasidim. And they were marking a yurt site. It was probably the third of Cheshvan. It was probably the yurt site of the Rizhner, the holy Rizhner. And the Baba Reb Shlomo stops his entourage. He's being followed by a whole group of people, his Gaboyim. And he looks into this tiny Beis Medrash, this storefront, on his way home. He looks, he peers inside, he stops, and he turns to his Gabbai, and he says, "Nu, let's go inside. I want to participate." So the Gabbai is shocked, he's astounded, he's incredulous. He turns to the Eilig Abba of the Rebbe, and he says, but Rebbe, with all due respect, what about the Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, the Machlokas, Sadigur, we can't go inside. This is the battle of his life. This was the battle of his Hasidus, of a family. How can we go against the Mesorah? How can we go against the tradition? How can we go inside? So the Baba, the great Ish Shalom, who spent his whole life trying to make peace, he said to his Gabbai, he said, "You know, my Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, he was an extraordinary Talmud Chacham. He was admired from his whole generation for his Torah knowledge. I don't have the Torah of the Zayda of the Divrei Chaim. My Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, was a Baal Chesed. Everybody knew the kindness, the selflessness that he showed to help people. I'm not the Zayda, I'm not the Divrei Chaim, I don't have his Chesed. My Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, his Kedusha, his holiness. Everybody knew the sanctity, the holiness that came off of that man. I'm a nothing, I'm a gurnished. I don't have the Kedusha of the Zayda of the Divrei Chaim. My Zayda, the Divrei Chaim, his Chasidus, what he built up. I'm a nothing, I don't have the Chasidus of the Divrei Chaim." Baba Vareba looked at his Gabbai and he said, "I don't have the learning, I don't have the Kedusha, I don't have the Chesed, I don't have the Chasidus. The only thing I should have from my Zayda is the Machlokas. I don't have those things, it's okay if I don't have the Machlokas either. Nu, let's go inside." And they went inside, they feared Tish together. It's a lot of things that we lost over Corona. It's a lot of changes that happened under our nose. The only thing we're going to have is Machlokas. We're going to have left us figuring out whose backyard, whose front yard, whose tent, whose shul, whose minion, who's this, who's that. Machlokas, that's what we're going to be left with this summer, these 3 weeks, these 9 days, this Tisha B'Av. That's what we're holding on to. That's what we're taking away. That's what we're doubling down and digging in on. Machlokas. Says the Chidah, you want parnasa, you want health, you want safety, you want bracha, you want gezunt. Stay far away from machlokas. The Kodesh Baruch Hu could forgive us the day of the eagle, but machlokas, you can't have. Said the same Babavar. You know, in Atbash, Seder night is the same night as Tisha B'Av. There's a lot of allusions to Tisha B'Av at the Seder, the egg and so on. Said the Babavar, we break the matzah yachatz, we have half a matzah. And then we tell the story, but the night, the story are incomplete until we bring back the other half, until we make the matzah whole. It's time to bring back the other halves in our lives. Whoever we're not talking to, whatever tension exists, whatever machlokas is there. In these 3 weeks, in the merit of the family still reeling from Surfside, from the many other calamities, let's try our best to become whole once again. Thank you.